They had arrived. Where? Two sets of footprints crossed from a closet to a rock wall, where a large round metal door stood ajar. It might have been the same door they had just entered, but that one was closed. The footprints might have been their own, but they were going in the opposite direction. And in any event, Kelvin and Helen were not here physically, so these could be John Knight's and Kyan's prints. They began moving, bodiless, but with direction. They paused, Helm sensing the way. There was a metal rope ladder anchored to a solid ring in the cliffside. The ladder descended into a large tree that seemed similar to the beanut tree where Kelvin had found his magic gauntlet. They swooped down to the roots of the tree and along the ground. As Helm followed the pull of the brother Kelvin had first met on a battlefield and tried to kill 9 months before, he looked around to the extent his form allowed. He saw or sensed a display in a tall oapple tree. Three silver spirals hung from a branch and produced the sound when the breeze twirled them. They looked like snakeskins, silver serpent hides that were stiff and dry, yet also shiny and bright. Now they were traveling across a wide valley, mountains, and rolling farmland similar to that of Rudd. On and on, interminably, but then swooping abruptly, hawk fashion, to a palace on a river bluff. They entered the palace and drifted through spectacular halls filled with art objects, some of which seemed familiar. On down carpeted hallways, polished corridors, and banistered stairs to a dank, dark, foul-smelling place that seemed made for fear.
But what is it, Kel?
Dungeon?
Indeed it was. Exactly such a dungeon as Kyan's mother, the evil Queen Zoanna, had used to confine Kelvin and his father, and Rufert, the good King of Rudd. Now he could see in the dim light that came through the high barred windows. There was his father, John Knight, haggard and dirty. There was his brother Kyan, in no better shape. And a third man, battered, blood-spattered, lying on the floor, propping his head with his arm, evidently too weak from loss of blood to do more. Standing between them and a barred door was a wide man wearing a silver crown. Kelvin focused on the man's face.
Rufert!
But no. This Rufert had round ears, as did the prisoners, while their Rudd counterparts had ears as pointed as John's and Lester's. The Rudd King's face, even after years of imprisonment, had a jovial appearance around the jowls that nothing could quite erase. This nearly identical face was taut and grim by comparison.
It's Rufert!
At the King's gesture, a man in uniform unlocked the cell, entered, and bent over the wounded man. John Knight grabbed the bars, seeming about to speak. Undeterred, the torturer pushed the unfortunate man's head down on the floor and twisted it sideways. Then he brought out a silver tube, held it above the prisoner's ear, unstoppered it, and tilted it carefully. Something silvery oozed out and flowed, undulating, into the man's ear. The guard paused only long enough to make sure the vial was empty. Then he let go of the prisoner and stepped quickly away. The prisoner pulled his face from the grime of the floor. His hand came up to touch his ear as if it itched. Then his look of perplexity darkened into something else. He clawed at his ear as if trying to wrench it out of his head. The King made a ghastly smile.
Silver's not so nice now, is it, Smith? Now that the little beastie's chewing in you.
The man shook all over from head to foot, his arms and legs spasmed.
We must go back! We are going back!
With that, the dungeon faded and slipped sideways. They were pulled as though by elastic back to the chamber, into the closet, through darkness and stars. It happened so swiftly as to be instant. Their minds seemed to shatter. Then they were home. They were on their bed in their room with their closest friends looking down at them.